Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Minorities in Publishing podcast. For new and returning listeners, you may know that you can hear the podcast wherever you do listen to these wonderful, wonderful audio libraries at Apple Podcasts now, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Google Play, and Spotify, as well as minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com and on Twitter at minoritiesinpub. And we have just two incredibly special guests on this episode who I am very honored to have because they've been doing such a whirlwind of touring in this month alone. We're in the next to last day of September, and we have Dr. Yousef Salam, social justice activist and motivational speaker, and E.B. Zuboi, National Book Award finalist for American Street, New York Times bestseller, and they are both jointly New York Times bestseller for their new collaboration, Punching the Air. It came out earlier this month from Harper. Balzer and Bray, to be specific. I want to make sure to get that imprint right. So welcome, you two, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, because y'all's been busy.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you. And first of all, we're all New York people. We're New Yorkers.
Yes.
And I'm Queens. Maybe you're kind of Queens, Brooklyn. Yousef, are you primarily uptown, Harlem?
Harlem, yeah.
I started out in Brooklyn, and then my mother moved on up to Queens.
And then you went back to Brooklyn.
Yeah, as an adult. There was nothing happening in my part of Queens. I was close to Long Island.
I like how you like caught that. You're like, in my part, not in Queens.
In Queens, because, you know, there are certain parts that are popping now. You know, people are moving out of Manhattan, and Queens is now a place to be.
But also, okay. we're in a similar age group. And I feel as though, you know, what we remember of New York City and our respective experiences, it obviously is not synonymous with each other's. But it's just so different from what people are experiencing and thinking of New York now. The commercialism has always been a part of New York. But I feel like there's just something so much more capitalistic. And that's, again, my perception as an adult versus like an eight-year-old, right? But the change in New York, especially we're looking at quarantine now, is just, it's hard to articulate at times. And I'm curious if either of you want to kind of discuss that, especially in terms of speaking to young people and raising young people in society now. And that leads into my next question on Punching the Air, because your dealings as parents and also getting into that kind of teenage mindset in terms of creating such a vivid and brilliant book, it feels as though we can't really dissect those two things, right? You can't necessarily divest who you were then and who you are now when you're speaking to young people, but also when you're writing for them.
I'll start with what you shared about New York City, us being from a certain generation. There is something to be said about being Gen X from New York City. New York City has undergone so many changes. So my New York City is not the same as my little sisters or my little brothers who are 8 and 12 years younger than me. In that sense, when I decided to work with Yousef on this book, a lot of it is because we share a lot of that same history. It's not just that we met in college 21 years ago. I remember the Central Park Five jogger case. I was younger, but I remember the atmosphere and what it did to the city and what it did to young people. And it's hard to convey that to children now, to say that New York City, to be a Black child in New York City, one, you played outside, and two, the neighborhoods were racially segregated, and three, it was incredibly violent. So all those three things were happening at the same time. And I don't think a lot of people can wrap their minds around those three things. We played outside, it was segregated, and it was violent. And it was not the South. There's something that Yousef says about the South. I don't know who you were quoting, Yousef. Was it Malcolm X? Do you remember that, Yousef?
Which part specifically?
Something about anything. So okay, I think I remember anything below Canada is the South. Something like that.
Oh, yeah. So it's just that, you know, New York becomes the up South. People think that it's not part of anything Southern, and the whole idea of racism seems like it doesn't exist, but it's so hidden that once you are made aware of it, you're like, oh, shucks, this is serious.
And we wanted this story, this version of his story, which is not his story, which is not Yousef Salam's story or the story of the Central Park Five. We wanted his name to be attached to a story like this so that he can continue to tell his story, the story of the Central Park Five, as for as long as he's alive, because he's simply because he's here to tell it. I know the world was shocked to know what had happened during the Central Park Five jogger case, and that these young men were still alive to tell it, and that it wasn't that long ago. It wasn't the civil rights era. It was 30 years ago, and we can still reflect back on what went wrong. So when that movie came out, when the series came out, and I had met Youssef and we decided to work on a book together before we even knew what was going to happen with the series. I didn't even know a series was happening. I know for my own children, they thought it was Emmett Till, civil rights movement, maybe the Black Power movement with the Black Panther Party, and then Trayvon Martin in 2012 and the Black Lives Matter movement. And nothing happened in between because they were not taught that in school. It was what they learned in school about the civil rights movement, the Black Panther Party, because it's just a new thing now. And then all of a sudden they're experiencing Black Lives Matter. And of course, they're not going to learn about what happened in New York City in the 80s and 90s, even the racial violent incidences in the 70s. So this was, we just want his story to continue to live on in different media.
Yeah, and one of the cool things about continuing this narration, so to speak, is connecting the dots. You know, they always say history is the best teacher. And one of the things that we've been disconnected from is the historical reference points that really will allow us to move forward in a productive way. I remember hearing Dr. Angela Davis say, we as a people have historical amnesia. And although I never asked her, but I suspect that what she meant by that is that the way we've been socialized is to forget. We remember everyone else's history, but we are told to forget ours. And I think remembering ours and continuing to connect the dots is really important, because Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was just yesterday. We just had the anniversary of the March on Washington, 57 years after the first March on Washington, 100 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. And so just to put things in context, it becomes full circle, because I've been in spaces where, you know, as I was speaking pre-COVID, I may go to a high school or a junior high school and they may say, hey, before we were known as the Exonerated Five, hey, we got a member of the Central Park Five coming in. And some of the young people would tell me, are you a member of a music group? It was an eye opener to realize that there's been a real huge effort to continuously to keep us deprived of moving forward, even from the wrongs that have been done for us. There's so much that can be learned about it that can propel us into the future.
Yeah, this is a conversation that Evie, you and I have had in terms of the educational aspect of Black stories in particular. We're looking at these kind of prepackaged stories of Martin Luther King, hundreds and hundreds of iterations of his story in every genre you can imagine, Malcolm X and Angela Davis in some forms. But there's also that element of the humanity and hope and all that in terms of the full character of who Amahl is. And Amahl is the main character in Punching the Air, and getting to know him from start to finish. And the importance of that, because I was thinking about also the old soul, which is at the very top of the book itself. And I don't know if it's quite ambitious metaphor, but thinking about how Black kids especially don't get to be young. And so thinking of Amahl already being aged in his awareness and all that, that brought to mind that kind of connection, because like you said, Youssef and EB, we're not learning our history in a real way that is getting into the layers that are needed to discuss it. And that's how we get to where we are now. So when you're writing this book and you're collaborating on that, how are you coming together to kind of extrapolate that in a way that is not this kind of after school movie special, right? Like really getting at the heart of that. Because that's a difficult practice in the act of creating.
Well, I think it's been my goal. I don't know if it was always my goal, because I wasn't aware of it as a debut author or even with my second book. I am more aware and conscious of the white gaze now in my work and as an author.
How do you mean you're conscious of the white gaze?
Okay, so one of the most frustrating things now is, by virtue of writing about race and writing about any form of social justice, it is immediately brilliant, as if we're not allowed to be aware of our, you know, of our oppression, as if a child can't be aware of the layers of racism and how that impacts their lives. That very basic intellectualism should not be brilliant. It is, of course, smart, but I don't think being aware of the ways in which society continues to disenfranchise you should be brilliant. It is rudimentary education for young people. So in that sense, how that connects to Amal, when I met Yousef 21 years ago, we were in a college class called the African Civilization, and our professor was a Pan-Africanist, meaning she was part of the SNCC movement in the civil rights era. She worked with the late John Henry Clark, and all her classes were African-centered, meaning we learned about the continent of Africa and understood that Africa wasn't a country, but we also learned about the different nations and how we got divided up and what the African worldview is. And I was 19, 20 learning that stuff. And 2 years after Yousef was released from prison, he went to seek out Dr. Marimba Ani to sit in on her classes because he'd been in spaces where he heard about her. So in that sense, he was, and I'm thinking of that Instagram page, a conscious kid. You know, back then we used to say conscious. Now it's the cliche woke. And there was a difference between young people who were just skimming the surface of everything. And then there were other young people like ourselves who were readers, who were thinkers, who were observers. And we were able to articulate what was happening and why that was happening. So when I met Yousef, when I re-met Yousef 3 years ago at a book festival, he'd been selling his self-published book of poetry. And some of those poems he had written as a teen. And one of those poems was I Stand Accused. And he later told me that he recited that poem after he was given that wrongful conviction in court. And he was 16 years old, and he was able to clearly articulate prison industrial complex, school to prison pipeline, the 13th Amendment, not in the way that we are talking about it now, but in the metaphors that he used way back then in 1989, 1990. So we wanted that kind of kid to exist on the page. Because those are my kids. Those are Yousef kids. Those are kids that we meet every day who are aware of their situations. They are brilliant indeed, but that awareness should not be brilliant. That is basic, basic knowledge. And how do you grow from that basic knowledge? What do you do with it? What you do with that information, that's where the brilliance lies. Simply stating that is not brilliant. What you do with it is brilliance. And what Yousef was able to do with his situation, how he's a speaker, the art that he created, that's brilliance. Yeah, did I answer your question, Jet?
You know, I like that pause right there, because that pause was just like, yeah, you know, I wanted to say, yeah. Yeah, you know, I feel like the beauty of that is what you derive, right? What's the derivative of what E.B. is speaking about and has spoken about, I think, is really what's important. It shows the overwhelming reality in terms of systemic oppression, in terms of institutional racism, in terms of white supremacy, white male dominance. It shows that there's been a concerted effort, even up until this day and on into our future, for the past 400 plus years, to keep us dumb, deaf, and blind, for lack of a better description. The ignorance in the Black and brown communities, which is not our fault, is a $1 trillion industry. And one of the most beautiful things about what we were learning, especially in that class, is that Dr. John Henry Clark, who was, you know, Marimba Ani was his protege. Dr. John Henry Clark used to say that when you begin a people's history with slavery, everything else looks like progress. We came from greatness. We are greatness. And the beautiful space that we can find ourselves in is we can break those generational curses and reemerge into our greatness. But there's been this concerted effort to keep us back and behind. And therefore, when you look at the prison industrial complex, you realize that this is the modern day cotton fields. You realize that what they have for us is three hots in a cot. They don't want us to be equal. They want us to be unequal. They want us to be divided. And I think one of the things about Punch in the Air, which is beautiful and brilliant at the same time, is that it provides water for the seeds of greatness inside of everyone, especially young people. As young people read this, they can see themselves in the shoes of an Amal. They can see themselves in the shoes of any of the characters. Perhaps the mothers will be able to see themselves in the shoes of Amal's mother and the teachers that taught Amal. Whether good teachers or bad teachers will be able to see themselves in these shoes, because part of the hope is that the children who just happen to be children of former slave owners and children of former slaves, so to speak, they are now using their privilege in a different way to try to change the future and to try to be more inclusive as opposed to exclusive. They are allowing people to come in and to bring their folding chairs in the same manner as a Shirley Chisholm. And in fact, sometimes they're giving us more information and more ideas in terms of what we already have that allows us to create our own tables. And I think that that's the beauty of it all too.
I also want to get into what you're saying about educators too, because there's the teacher specifically in Amal's case who serves as a character witness. And Amal does reflect on those aspects of a different way of learning, a way of being seen and a way of being perceived. And that happens all the time, especially for Black kids and marginalized people in general, is that there's a perception that comes from the outset. And it's not graceful and it's not always lenient. It is, can be very much one track. This is what you are and who you are and how we can, I'm saying the royal we in this sense, learn to be that, right? You're treated like this, you start to believe it, or you at least start to attribute your behavior to it rather than having people understand it. And I love those parallels too, because it made me think as someone who also teaches, but also just interacts with people, how are we reflecting young people through our quote unquote adult mindsets? Because not every adult is an adult, right? And so I'm curious about those kind of parallels. And I also love those sections where we looked at lights on and lights off, seeing light in the day and then life, the reflections at night. The juxtaposition was, it felt intentional, but not in a planned way, if that makes sense. Like from a creative craft perspective, it really did feel intentional in a way of showcasing something that was really important to bring full life to Amal. So can you talk a little bit about how those approaches came in terms of the people who were in Amal's life that came up through the story, but also how that sections, those sections, the lights on, lights off came about, if that was your decision or that was kind of like collaborative with publisher?
So our process was lots of conversations. It wasn't necessarily about what needs to happen next in the story. I don't think I asked you a lot of questions, Yousef. I think it was just being free with it. The same way that you hear Yousef speaking about, you know, larger issues, this is the same thing that came up during our conversations. And I had the task of taking those ideas and turning them into poems, but those poems needed characters to anchor them. And this idea of Yousef and those other four young men being seen as animals during the Central Park Five jogger case speaks to the testament of how boys are viewed in general. Of course, we know that already, but I had to think about, well, how does that apply in the classroom? How does that come to be when a teacher interacts with a Black boy on a one-on-one level? And I think well-meaning teachers think they're doing a world of good when they're in these classrooms with Black children. At the same time, because they don't know and understand Black culture and Black people, they can do a lot of harm. So that poem, Character Witness, has double meaning because this white teacher is a witness to his character in the same way that a lot of white teachers are witnesses to Black children's characters. And I experienced that as a mother. Miss Rinaldi, the art teacher, was inspired by my son's art teacher. At the same time, I was getting emails from my art teacher. I was drafting this novel and I was so furious. I was just like, you know what? This is exactly what I want to say. I couldn't personify New York City. You know, I wanted to say something about what New York City represented and what those boys, the Central Park Five, represented. So in that sense, the personification of New York City as a whole is through Miss Rinaldi, and the personification of the Central Park Five, Yousef specifically, is Amal. So I put those two ideas together in a classroom and in a courtroom. Miss Rinaldi is supposed to be his character witness, but she's been a witness to his character from the moment he stepped into his classroom. She attributed a certain characteristic to him, and that is how she taught him that she needs to help him, that he is already broken and she is here to fix him. So I've seen it with my own two eyes. And this is what New York City was trying to do. New York City was trying to fix the city and clean it up. And those boys need to learn their lesson. And that's across the board.
I love that. It's almost like full circle to be able to have young people read Punching the Air also gives them the overwhelming opportunity to, like, we're letting them know that they're not crazy. Because, you know, oftentimes when I was growing up, there would be that time where you would be like, did they just, hold on, what's going on? Did that? And in your mind, you're like, no, this can't be real. This can't be right. And right in front of your face, they are exhibiting the type of oppression that they don't even realize sometimes themselves, that is just a part of their being. And I think what happens with Punching the Air is that it is that full circle of being able to let the young people know, no, you're not crazy. What you are experiencing is real. And this is what we can do about it. And this is how you can process it. I think that that part is important because especially when we're talking about young people, we're trying to add to the greater good by raising good, whole children to become good, whole adults, as opposed to trying to repair broken men, as I think Frederick Douglass said, or broken people.
It feels like a circuitous nature of what you're saying, what both of you are saying, but especially what you were saying about kind of fixing broken men or broken people, I'll say. And it's amazing to me how much the system and society and we kind of glom onto all of this breaks everyone down. And especially now, we're in another form of isolation, imposed isolation. And it does feel like on another level that is also bringing to light a lot of things for people personally, but also globally from what we're seeing. And thankfully, people are moving towards books and moving more towards books if they weren't moving towards books before. Feels like Punching the Air. And I hate the word timely. I hate it. I hate it. Publishing uses it way too much. I hate it. But like the timing of this book, it feels especially prescient because of the conversations and the way that young people can focus, and older people too. I shouldn't just say young people, but older people can focus on this a little bit more now that we are in a level of isolation. So how has that been for you both in terms of talking to people and having a new book out jointly that is, again, is a New York Times bestseller, and talking to people in a kind of isolated but building a community around conversations where people are trying to learn and do better?
I'll tie the answer to your question to a question you asked earlier, but I didn't answer. We didn't answer. Was the lights out and lights on part of the book. The lights off part were when Amal can be very introspective. Of course, I didn't ask Yousef these questions. They sort of came up in conversation. I had to ask myself, how is he so self-aware? And that self-awareness is not adult Yousef. That self-awareness was there when he was 16 years old. And I did ask Yousef, how did he get to be that sort of conscious, woke 16-year-old? And he told me his mother had a huge role to play with that. But I'm thinking of incarcerated young men and women as well, where that sort of time, you are forced to contend with yourself, especially at night when it's dark and you're in this box. There is nothing to do except to deal with that spirit inside. And depending on where you are mentally and emotionally, it could be something that breaks you down or builds you up. And that's another part that came from Yousef when he would say things like, by going to jail, he went from the womb to the tomb and back to the womb again. And that he's coming out of his mother's belly in this tomb was this idea of the system trying to bury him. But in that process of being underground or out of sight, he was able to be born again. So in that sense, that's why we started the novel with Amal being born. And there's a process where he was made anew. So all of that connects to our time now, what's going on in the world. We're forced to like contend with ourselves. Yeah. You know, we're forced to be at home and just deal with the people we live with for better or for worse and deal with ourselves. During this whole process, I'm like, do I really want to be on Twitter? It's one of those, okay, what kind of career do I want to have? What kind of person do I want to have? Yousef, are you having some of these same questions during quarantine?
I think absolutely. And you know, one of the things, and I just got to be very honest with you about this, people have correlated being in quarantine with prison. And although it's not the same thing, there is a certain truth to that. And having been in prison, and now here we are all experiencing this, so to speak, social distancing, isolation together, there's a ease of me being able to manage it. And I'm saying it in an incorrect way, but the way I've been able to deal with it has been a lot easier than I think, say, my wife or my children. But when I look at my children, because they're growing and they're so young, and I think we see this in all children, they show us the resilience. They show us how to be. They give us a clue on how to live this new type of life, because they are like the bamboo and they can move and sway back and forth and not break. But I think that there's always moments where you reevaluate yourself, especially during COVID-19, because you realize that this is now the new normal. And in the new normal, once things, so to speak, normalize, how do you want to show back up in the world? And part of the grace, I think, is getting the opportunity to breathe, getting the opportunity to reassess, sitting down with self and saying to your own self, okay, now what? What am I supposed to do with this moment? What am I supposed to do with this time? Who am I? And even in the questioning, I think there's brilliant, beautiful answers that happen. And it might not happen right away, but you know, there's that old saying that says, be still and listen and know that I am God. We're here and God is not done with us yet. And there's so much to happen and so much to be grateful for. And we're also being challenged by life to become the fittest of the fittest, right? Life is chiseling us. Life is giving us all of these indelible scars. And the ones who survive are the ones who are the fittest of the fit, you know? And I'm not talking about people who have passed away because of ailments of COVID-19 and things like that. That's a tragedy in and of itself, especially when you have somebody in the White House telling people that it's okay, you can walk outside and not even care. It's a hoax. Lo and behold, now we are the number one in terms of victims of this really, really horrific experience that we are all experiencing. But coming out of it on the other side, we should all, those who survive, we should all come out of it with a certain wisdom associated with life itself, a certain appreciation associated with life itself, and even a direction, perhaps, that we should be moving in.
That's so, so true. And my last question is going to be in terms of, EB, you did touch upon, I don't want to say past life as an educator, because I don't feel like you've ever left that educator life and that instructional life where you give us so much of your wisdom. But I am curious about that, those lives that you lead, currently lead, and you have led, and how that also attributes to what progress you want to see, and those kind of ways you're interpreting that in terms of working with young people, and also choosing to do a book for young people. You do encapsulate that in the introduction. I'm presuming people haven't read the introduction yet, so that's partially why I'm asking you. Of how does that experience also bring forth a very specific type of conversation that we're having, and a way of seeing them, the way that you so wonderfully rendered Amal?
Well, I'll speak to the goal of this book. We both said that this book is not just about mass incarceration or the prison industrial complex or juvenile justice. Those are elements in there. But ultimately, it is about the soul of a child. It's getting into the skin and bones of this boy who finds himself between a proverbial rock and a hard place. And we could only do that because of Yousef's personal experience. So that is the only way we were able to just really, really capture the essence of a child going through the system. So in that sense, it is not just young people. It seems like a certain kind of teacher will teach it to say, here are the things that are wrong with criminal justice. No, this is a mirror book for Black children. This is a way to just show Black children that they have a reflection out there in the world, in the criminal justice system, not because he is locked up, but because he's having an emotional human journey. So this is humanizing the character. If I were to teach this book, I would teach young people about emotional intelligence. This is the primary thing in the book. And the power of art, the healing power of art, the redemptive power of art. Emotional intelligence means that you can name your emotions. And once you can name your emotion, you can try to get it out of you. And there's something that Youssef always says about what Maya Angelou says about rage or bitterness. Youssef, you could help me with that. What did Maya Angelou say? And yeah, I have a line of that in the poem.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant piece, I think. And I always refer to it, especially because, you know, people always say, wow, you're such, you know, they expect me to be bitter and just besides myself with anger. And I remember listening to the words of Dr. Maya Angelou, and she said, you should be angry, but you must not be bitter. She said, bitterness is like a cancer. It eats upon the host. It doesn't do anything to the object of its displeasure. And then she tells us how to all become alchemists, right? She says, so use that anger. You dance it. You march it. You vote it. You do everything about it. And then she said something really interesting. She said, you talk it. Never stop talking it. You know, there's that beauty that happens when you can tell your story and define for yourself who you are and what you are, as opposed to having the system tell the world collectively, those folks over there represent this, without telling the full story, that you created this and then you relegated us to that space and we are trying to survive and we are the roses that are growing out of the concrete.
I miss Dr. Angelou too. She's just not just full of wisdom, but just full of so much heart and soul. And It's such a great way to reconnect with her. And I'm really so thankful for you both in joining together to create this book and for you as individuals as well. It's a very, very powerful book. And I know that adjective gets overused a lot, but I really appreciate you being on again and thank you for your time. And thank you for Punching the Air. And for everyone who's listening, if you haven't gotten Punching the Air, please do, by Dr. Youssef Salaam and E.B. Zaboy, out now, wherever books are sold. And also, y'all will be doing more stuff, it looks like. I think you already did something with Well-Read Black Girl, but it sounds like you have more stuff coming in October. So the train is going
full speed ahead. Yeah, right? It's all virtual, but yeah, we'll both be at the Well-Read Black Girl. I don't know if it was announced, but... Yeah, I did the book club. Youssef is doing things on his own. I'm doing things on my own and doing a lot of things together this past month. And out in the world, I'm not going to tap dance for people to buy the book. It's out. It's doing its thing.
for this one.
No, that's one of the things I told Ebony and my editor, Alessandra. Look, we're not going to do a happy dance for this because it's a different feel. I personally don't feel right about the sort of flashy marketing that YA books tend to have. And because it's a certain tone, you know, this is somebody's life. Mm-hmm. This is somebody's life. This is the lives of hundreds of thousands of young people in the system. And there is a certain energy and tone that you put this forth out into the world, because I'm sensitive to, you know, to what happened to Youssef and the Central Park Five and the nameless, countless other young men and women who've gone through the system and the families that were affected. So I don't want to do a certain thing to push out this product. At the end of the day, it's still a corporate product. It is a book, but at the same time, the story in there has meaning, it has impact. So it's one of those compromises that we have to do. We want to share our story. That's a medium. At the same time, we don't want to have to play into some of those capitalist trappings of having to sell a product.
And it's a hard balance. It's great to be conscious of that because not everyone is.
Right, right. And it's been a wonderful journey working with Youssef. Right, Youssef?
It's actually been more than that, I think, because for me, I get the opportunity to really come into this world with a seasoned pro. So, I mean, it's brilliant. It's beautiful. It's grace. It's a lot of grace that I can say that I have been given.
Yes.
Because of this. And I think that that's the part that's amazing. I think about things that you put out there in the world. And, you know, sometimes people do things because it's about making money and surviving and so forth and so on. And then you realize that everything affects everyone in a different way. And so therefore, everything is teaching everyone. You may say to yourself, I'm just going to be a comedian. And then you have to realize that in the comedy, there's a certain serious side that you have to say to yourself, wow, I have to do what Dave Chappelle did and tell the truth and just leave it there. Because it's not about a frivolous life. Life is really serious and real. And once we're gone, everything that we did will be here in carrying on through others. And I think that it's important that we make sure that the marks that we leave are marks of genius and brilliance and also breadcrumbs to show the way. You know, it becomes the light in the darkness.
Yeah, and it's vividly here too, because like we said with the sections too, the lights on and the lights off, there are those parallels that really speak to how we choose to live a life and how we experience it in return. And it's deep stuff, y'all. It's deep.
Thank you. Thank you. Had some deep questions. We did some deep dives. Thank you, Jennifer. That was
the best news I've ever had. I'm like, I really don't have a follow-up for that. I'm like, that was just so well said. There's really nothing else to add to this. That speaks to the brilliance of you both as individuals and the wonderful humanity you exude. So
thank you so much again, Ibi and Youssef, for being on the podcast and for talking about your latest book together. You can find them both online at their respective websites as well as different social media channels. You can find Dr. Youssef Salam at youssefspeaks.com. That is YUSEFSPEAKS.com. And Ibi at ibizaboy.net. That is IBIZOBOI.net. Thanks so much again. And for new and returning listeners, you may know you can find the podcast at Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com or on Twitter at minoritiesinpub. And you can sign up for the newsletter as well. Thanks, take care, and stay safe.